This podcast is brought to you by SMC. Money wise, be wise.
Hi folks, and welcome to Simply Save. This is the personal finance podcast at Money Control. I'm Kaizad Adajania. Now, if there's one news item that soaked the limelight of the mutual funds industry in the past 8 months, we know what it is. It's about debt funds. It's about the crisis that debt funds have been going through ever since ILFS collapsed last September 2018. But ILFS was just a start. Right? I mean, we have seen plenty of other companies. We've seen troubles with SL Group. We've seen troubles with DHFL. And, you know, all these instruments present across the portfolios of several mutual fund houses have really impacted the NAVs of all these funds. Now, investors are running scared. There are a lot of questions in the investor's mind as to what to do. Should we withdraw? Should we take this opportunity, in fact, and put additional money in debt funds? But worry not. I have with me just the expert over here in the studios to help you solve your problems. He's Joydeep Sen. He's a debt market expert and he's the founder of the investment advisory firm WiseInvestor.in. And Joydeep also writes regular columns on debt funds and debt investments and monetary policy on moneycontrol.com. Hi, Joydeep, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Joydeep, we've seen a lot of turbulence in debt funds in the last 8 months or so. We'll get to the specifics a little later. But first question that investors have in their minds is, have we seen the worst or is the worst yet to come?
Okay, to my mind, the worst is over. Now, when I say this, you know, the cases you mentioned, all the way from ILFS to ADAG to SL Group, DHFL and other concerns. So hopefully whatever had to happen has happened. To give you a bit of a perspective, what was the starting point? 2015, something called Asset Quality Review.
Okay.
Started by the RBI governor, then governor, Mr. Raghuram Rajan.
Rajan, yeah.
So what he did is, he questioned banks that when you say this asset is good, is it really good? So after this start of what is called the Asset Quality Review of banks' portfolios, the whole thing started. And what we are seeing after that is, if a promoter has done something wrong, as in, to put it in a bad language, playing with public money,
okay,
that promoter is being made to suffer.
Okay.
And in a way, even today, we see the continuation of the same trend, like the cases you have mentioned.
Hmm.
In not a single case, there is a bailout by the government of those promoters.
Correct.
On one hand, the government is making those promoters suffer. On the other hand, thankfully, hopefully, there is no systemic crisis.
Okay.
So it is like this, if it is a good promoter-backed company, they can even today raise funds in spite of the NBFC liquidity crisis.
Okay.
So just to give an example, if HDFC Limited or LIC Housing Finance wants to raise funds, they can.
Okay.
They can, and point number two, at a reasonable cost of finance.
Okay.
So only in case of some names where the name is tarnished because of whatever reason, those promoters are finding it difficult to raise funds.
Okay.
So to answer your questions, hopefully, if there is no new bomb waiting to burst, the worst is over.
Okay.
And from now, things will improve.
Okay. But what is it that you're hearing in the market? I mean, you said in your answer that if there are no more bombs to be exploded, but nobody knows whether it's going to happen or not. So
after the cases you mentioned, I have not heard of any fresh event in the market. So let's say even Jet Airlines.
Okay.
So there are certain conspiracy theories and all those theories are going on. But the point is, there is no individual promoter-driven bailout.
Okay.
So any promoter who is internally strong, to give the latest example, India Bulls.
Okay.
In spite of all the allegations, the court case, the allegation which came yesterday,
yeah,
they're still standing.
Yeah.
So, if the allegations are not founded, then you stand strong. The promoter stands strong.
Okay. So, I think one of the outcomes of this crisis is that, especially in open-ended funds we've seen, where people are free to get in and get out. We know when these bad securities cases come up, a lot of investors withdraw their money and get out. Okay, so the corpus falls. Obviously, because of illiquidity on the other hand, fund houses cannot sell these securities. So the percentage of these bad securities to the overall corpus of the fund really like shoots up to 40-50%. So if I open my portfolio after everybody has gone out, I would see that the fund has invested, let's say, 40-50% of its entire corpus in just one security, which is a bad security. So, you know, how should existing investors deal with it? People have chosen to stay behind.
So that's actually a tricky one. If you go back to history, 2015, JP Morgan AMC.
Yeah.
What they did is, when this Amtrak Auto case happened, they stopped redemptions.
Yeah, they stopped redemptions and then they side pocketed.
So thereafter 2016, SEBI passed a regulation saying mutual funds cannot stop redemptions.
Okay.
So in this kind of case, when there is a bad paper in the portfolio, just in case the mutual funds were allowed to stop redemptions, they could have done that.
Okay.
So that would have prepared a run on the corpus. And if that happened, if the bad asset is say 8% of the portfolio, it remains around 8% of the portfolio.
Okay.
But in the current situation, there's a SEBI rule, a mutual fund cannot stop redemptions. Which means if there is a run, whoever does not leave the fund, like you said, he or she is left with 30, 40, 50% of the bad asset. That's a tricky one, because if we recommend that at the slightest hint of trouble, you should exit the fund, that means we are adding to the problem. We should not do that.
Okay.
On the other hand, like we saw in the case of one mid-sized AMC, there was one particular fund with a corpus of 550 crores. That fund became only 15 crores.
Okay. That's a huge fall.
So due to which, the extent of DHFL limited in the portfolio, which is like say 8-9%, became like 60-80%.
Okay.
Because of the run on the portfolio.
Yeah.
Now, ideally, if others did not exit, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So only because of this, what should I say, herd mentality, fear, psychosis, this thing unfortunately happened with this AMC. Similar thing happened earlier also in 2008-09 in case of one foreign-based AMC.
Yeah.
There was a run on the fund and the liquid plus fund was wiped off in about a week.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky one. The answer is ideally don't worry, be there. But in case you see there is a severe run on the funds, the portfolio is dwindling fast, then maybe yes, then maybe you can take a call and exit. But if it is a largish AMC and largish corpus size is more or less stable, then no need to panic.
Okay, so if there is a huge drawdown on the fund, and as a result of which the exposure to a single batch security goes up to 60-70%, you're saying then it's a case of...
Just to give some guidance to the audience, if you say, for example, a 10-20% corpus reduction at the end of the month, because you can only end of the month portfolio disclosure.
Correct.
Okay, some people give weekly or something, but largely it is end of the month.
Yeah.
So if you see a significant reduction in the end of the month corpus, then yes, then maybe you can take a call and exit the fund.
Okay. What about the categories of funds, the types of funds in which they've invested in? Now, I can understand if a credit risk fund has invested in weak credit companies and one of them, bursts and there is a crisis on hands. But, we've seen many liquid funds, we've seen many some ultra short-term funds, we've seen conservative hybrid funds also having these kind of scripts. So, how can fund houses justify holding these kind of scripts in these kind of funds?
So, to give a perspective, in whatever happened in the liquid funds, ultra short-term fund, or even an arbitrage fund, it was ILFS, which was AAA rated, and it was a quasi-PSU.
Okay.
So, who would imagine a AAA rated quasi-PSU would become AAA to D in a matter of 1.5 months and would default?
Okay.
So in hindsight, yes, fund managers should have known better, but to be practical, fund managers also are human. So, it's difficult. So, some fund managers made the mistake. They had AAA papers in their liquid funds and other supposedly good quality funds, and everybody suffered, yes. So, that has happened, but I would not blame them really, because in the liquid or other supposedly good quality funds, they never took any within quote bad papers. These were supposedly good papers. Something accidentally went wrong. Even DHFL, it was AAA at one point of time.
Okay.
So, you never know what goes wrong somewhere.
So, it was not an intentional credit risk when they took it on.
Yes. That's so, just to give an example, I won't name the fund. There was one credit risk fund which is supposedly the most toxic in the industry, in the credit risk funds space.
Okay.
This fund suffered 3 defaults.
Okay.
One is ILFS and 2 other companies which only they had exposure to. So, there are 3 defaults in the portfolio. But in the other supposedly good quality funds, defaults happen only in the supposedly good quality papers. Just to give an analogy, a very down-to-earth analogy, let's say there are 2 localities. One locality is a theft-prone area, and the other locality is a supposedly safe place.
Okay.
So, common sense will say, take up your house in the better locality, but you never know. It may so happen that in the theft-prone locality, the watchman is alert, and in the supposedly safe area, the watchman is sleeping. So, you never know what goes wrong somewhere. Because for every default of, say, AAA ILFS or AAA DHFL, there are so many companies which are rated BBB or even below BBB, which is sub-investment grade, who have paid back. We don't keep track of them.
But that need not justify a liquid fund and an ultra-short-term fund investing in those kind of securities, right?
So the point I'm making is, liquid ultra-short, they invested only in AAA papers.
Okay.
They did not invest in those BBB or those kind of papers.
But you're saying something somewhere went wrong and went drastically wrong and so quickly that before they could react, the ratings had dropped, like so, in the case of ILFS you pointed out.
So if you're asking what went wrong, one is the debate about rating agencies. So why did they give AAA? Why could they not sense some trouble is brewing? That is one. And secondly, there were some hints in the market. It happens in quite a few cases that the market has a hint of some trouble, some cash flow issues brewing in some company, which the rating agency is not aware of. I don't know why.
Okay.
So these things, when you're in touch with market participants, you get to hear sometime somewhere. So the question is, if you and I, if we get to hear of those, why do rating agencies miss it out? So the case in point is, in certain AMCs, the fund managers were aware that even though ILFS is rated AAA by the rating agencies, there are some cash flow issues brewing.
Okay.
So they did not invest in ILFS.
Okay.
And there are other fund managers who went by the pure AAA rating and nature of shareholding of quasi PSU kind of LIC and bank kind of shareholding. They went by that and they invested.
Yeah. So, speaking about different fund houses and speaking about different strategies, when I look at the entire spectrum of debt funds, over the years, the way fund houses have evolved, you have some fund houses who do not take too much of risk or do not take any risk. You have like IDFCs of the world, maybe Axis Mutual Fund, you can even say to a large extent L&T Mutual Fund also. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have Franklin Templeton Mutual Fund, which is an expert at taking credit risk, but that's what they specialize in. All right. And their strategies are very clear. But there's a whole host of fund houses in the middle that can swing either ways depending on the markets, depending on the flows that they get, depending on, what their investors might want them to do, etc., etc. So, from an investor's point of view, you have choices, right? But then, you have very few choices, I would say, that are nicely classified, but then you have a whole host of fund houses that can go either ways. So how should investors take this choice and put a fund that is most appropriate to them?
Yeah. So what you said in a classic example of Virendra Sehwag and Rahul Dravid. So one hand, like the fund houses you named on one side, other side, other fund house you named. Rahul Dravid and Virendra Sehwag. And then you have all these, Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, somewhere in between. Now there is an answer. There is a fund category called Banking and PSU Fund.
Banking and PSU Fund, yeah.
In the entire turmoil, like you said, last 8 months, if you look at various fund categories, liquid funds have suffered, short-term bond funds have suffered, even corporate bond funds, who are supposed to have at least 80% in AAA or AA+.
Correct.
Even this category also has suffered.
Okay.
But Banking PSU, not a single negative tick in the entire turmoil.
Okay.
It is the nature of holding.
Okay.
So banks, within quote, banks are banks.
Yeah.
Obvious, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
PSUs, within quote, PSUs are PSUs.
Yeah.
So this category is unscathed.
Okay.
And about the AMCs you mentioned, if the investor wants to play relatively safe, then he can go to the AMCs you named, or they can go to the other kind of, relatively little bit of riskier kind of AMCs. They have their choice.
But mostly you have to, an investor also has to do some kind of, due diligence to figure out. Because you're not going to put all your corpus in a banking PSU fund, right?
To answer it a little differently, there is a very easy and simple way of reducing your risk in debt funds. That is diversification.
Okay.
Now, what is diversification? Let me give you an example. Let us say there is an equity fund. Let us say hypothetically, the equity fund has 100 stocks of 1% each. Even if the price of one stock goes up significantly, how much do you gain? Only so much?
Yeah.
Because I have only 1%?
Yeah.
Whereas in a debt fund, it works completely differently. It is about the accrual mostly and maybe some bit of mark-to-market gain.
Okay.
Which means if a debt fund is spread across 100 securities, it does not really harm.
Okay.
Because the endeavor is to get the accrual. So if the portfolio accrual is, say, for example, 8%, the fund is getting 8%. On the other hand, if there is one default, How much do you suffer? Only 1%.
Yeah.
Like you said, liquid funds. So one AMC had 10% LFS.
Hmm.
So that liquid fund had more than 1 year return wiped off.
Okay.
Another liquid fund had 2% in LFS.
Okay.
So they had 2% of their returns wiped off.
Okay.
So as an investor, if you diversify your funds, your money across so many funds,
okay,
you are diversifying your risk.
Okay.
So whichever category you take a safe banking basic category or you take a riskier credit risk category. If you diversify across categories, you are reducing your default risk.
Okay. So that brings me to my next question. Many people say that, you know, you're taking risks already when you're investing in an equity fund. Why do you want to take more risk when, by investing in a debt fund? Why not just put your money in a bank fixed deposit or an NSE? Or because in debt funds also, I mean, the risks have always been there, but people are now realizing that what is risk in a debt fund? So should you invest in a debt fund at all, or should you just, would you recommend people to take all the kind of risk that they want in equity fund and then the debt fund just fill it, shut it, forget it kind of a thing in a bank?
So what you are saying is not unfounded. There is money to that also, that you take risk in equity and put debt only all this, you know, what I say, contractual return.
Okay.
As in bank FD kind
yeah.
of. If it is 7.5, it is
7.5.
But having said that, there are merits in mutual funds also. Firstly, somewhere there was an assumption or perception that debt funds cannot default.
Correct.
Right? Now, with so much of discussion on risks in credit funds, if you look at the history of equity funds, look at the volatility.
Yeah.
There have been periods of extreme negative returns.
Correct.
But nobody ever raised the question, should we desist from investing in equity funds?
Yeah.
No, because it is accepted that equity market can be volatile.
Correct.
In debt funds, there are many types of risks, but broadly two. One is volatility and one is the credit default risk.
Yeah.
Volatility, yes, it is there. It is kind of accepted.
Yeah.
And default risk also is there.
Yeah.
Somehow, defaults did not happen so far. So it is only now, all these cases of ILFS, ADAG, SL,
yeah.
DHFL and all those, people are discovering credit risk is there. Now, to give the answer to your question, in spite of all these risks, and default risk, volatility risk, everything, if you look at the past 3 year, 5 year returns of debt funds, it is still decent.
Okay.
If you look at the returns from banking passive fund over last 1 year, it is high single digit. In spite of all these incidents or accidents that have happened in the industry. There are points like, you know, liquidity and all these factors which work in favor of mutual funds as against others. PPF, yes, but there's a limit of 1.5 lakhs.
Yeah.
You cannot go beyond 1.5 lakhs. And there is tax efficiency in debt funds.
Correct.
So if you hold for 3 years, a growth option, indexation, and that reduces your tax significantly.
Correct.
So 20%, which is the apparent rate of taxation, comes out something like 5 or 10% only as the effective taxation rate after the indexation benefits.
So there is merit, you're saying, despite all of that. And I remember when you said about, you know, equity markets being so volatile, that you know, the risk over there is accepted, so people don't withdraw. And you remember that, you know, in a session, Santosh Kamath, guru of taking credit risks, he also said the same thing, that, you know, in equity funds there is so much of volatility, but it is accepted. In debt funds, one event which happens, you call it an accident rather than a credit event. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of time also that investors now understand debt funds better than what debt funds were perceived to be. No debt fund can even assure you returns, right? I mean, there are, there's going to be volatility over there. There's going to be credit events over there.
So any investment is market driven. I mean, mutual fund investment, not the contractual bank FD kind of thing. So nobody can assure you. But you know, so many things work on perception. Like we're discussing the perception of default in debt funds. Just to give an analogy, let's say World Cup semi-final, second last over. Somebody apparently only defending or trying to take a single. Perception-wise, if he just heaved the bat, you never know what would have happened. You never know. He could have got out. He could have just missed it. Ball goes to the wicketkeeper, I don't know. But the crowd would have perceived, see, he's trying. But maybe actually we are better off by taking a single. He's ticking the scoreboard and taking one run at least. You never know. So similar thing for debt funds.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know, whatever this phase we discussed, post-ILFS, so many events or accidents happening, hopefully the bad phase is over.
Okay.
And, you know, the regulators, RBI, government, SEBI, they are watching.
Okay.
And they are taking some measures.
Okay.
Liquidity issues are still there. But overall, they are looking at some solutions and taking some measures for liquidity infusion.
Okay.
So hopefully this phase will pass.
Okay. And whose job is it really to explain the risks of debt funds, Joydeep? Are you satisfied with the communication that fund houses have been sending out to investors, or the way they have carried themselves throughout this risky period? Or should the advisors be more watchful, hand-holding investors to tell them what to do and what not to do?
I would say both. I would take it one step further by adding investors also.
Okay.
So how does it work? For the AMC, it is the AUM hierarchy.
Okay.
For the advisor, it is the revenue.
Okay.
And for the investor, it is the return.
Okay.
Somewhere, the main thing gets lost. For the investor, it is allocation, not revenue, not return. And for the advisor, it is the long-term relationship, not the revenue. And for the AMC, it is the being true to level, not being part of the AUM game.
So misplaced priorities need to be...
on both sides. So misplaced priorities both for the manufacturer, the seller, which is the advisor or the distributor, as well as the investors. So the communication sent out by the AMC, they should rather show 5-10 year returns than 3 months, 6 months
returns.
The advisor should speak of the quality of the portfolio, what it stands for, what is the portfolio allocation, rather than, EHI kind of approach. And the investor also should ask the right questions. Because typically investors ask, mujhe kitna milega? See, it is only today. Today we are discussing what? Banking PSU fund? If you go back 1 year, whoever asked about banking PSU fund or whoever asked about this credit risk and default risk and all those things. Let me give you a simple example. In case, just in case, investors were aware of risks. In the entire mutual fund industry, is there any single G-Sec FMP? Not a single one. So just imagine, let us say a salesperson of one AMC saying, I have a 8% FMP. And the sales guy of another AMC saying, I have a 6% FMP. Client will say, why? Why only 6%? He will say, mera G-Sec hai, unka corporate bond hai. Which one he will buy? Obviously corporate bond.
See,
at the time of buying, nobody is bothered about risk. What I'm trying to say is the sales team of a 6% one FMP, even if it is G-Sec, will not be able to sell. So it is only when something goes wrong, people say, "Acha, what is this credit risk? Is the worst over?" And things like that.
Yeah, that's true. But hopefully now the realization of risks in debt funds would be a little bit better, if not much, as compared to what we were last year. Joydeep, one last question I wanted to ask you about the slew of regulations that came about in debt funds a month ago by SEBI. There is this, they single out liquid fund, and they said that there's going to be a graded exit load for the first 7 days, right? So there will be exit loads, there will be a graded structure, and after 7 days, you're free to withdraw your money. Now, one is that, do you think it's going to make any difference, to a liquid fund returns? And number two is, why do you think did SEBI target only liquid funds over here? I mean, there's an overnight fund, there is a money market fund, there is a low duration fund, which would come around liquid funds, right? And most of your investors who invest in liquid funds would also have a similar profile and invest in these kind of other funds also. But why only liquid fund?
Okay, two things here. The second part first. The answer is, if you look at the corpus volatility, it is the highest in liquid funds.
Okay, so inflows, outflows.
It is so high, it is like, just to give you a number, last September 18, the amount of net outflow from liquid fund category was 2,11,000 crore. It is humongous. Just imagine, in 1 month, net outflow from category is 2,11,000 crore. Money came back gradually. Again, there were inflows, even there were outflows.
As every year.
As every year, typically those advance tax, corporate advanced payments, and
even in March and April also.
This thing happens in March, money goes out, April money
comes back.
So much of corpus volatility does not happen in any other category, be it overnight, be it money, money market, ultra short term, no other category.
But overnight also is a new category.
Yes, it's a new category, it is gradually catching up. So returns are 1% lower than liquid funds, but it is the safest category. Now, your question was about what. The regulation, why this regulation and all that. So where SEBI is coming from is, we can debate the right or wrong part of it. SEBI's approach is, mutual fund is meant for individuals and not corporates. And if you look at the holding pattern of liquid funds, it is mostly corporate money.
Mostly corporates.
Right?
Absolutely.
So SEBI's thinking is that a product, liquid fund, which is supposedly for individuals, why should it be used by corporates only? So if it is used, let's put an exit load.
Okay.
Which means corporates should not play this come in today and exit tomorrow.
Okay.
So let corporates come in with a proper planning, as in a 7-day kind of planning.
Yeah.
So we can debate. Some don't like this idea of a load in a liquid fund because it's a cash management product.
Okay.
But anyway, SEBI has their own logic that so much of corpus volatility is not good for the industry.
Yeah.
It leads to selling pressure, and that may lead to market impact, selling cost, impact cost, and all those things. So that is the thing. On returns, it is positive.
Okay.
The reason is, if the exit load is not there, we will see bunching of redemptions.
Yeah.
And bunching of redemption means sales pressure, and the market is not liquid.
Okay.
So in an illiquid market, so to prevent this bunching of outflows and redemptions, it is good to have this exit load.
Okay. Good. Thank you so much, Joydeep, for all your gyan, all your wisdom as usual. And folks, that's all we have for you today. If you have any questions on debt funds, any more questions, we'll be happy to take them in our future episodes. So please do write into us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, that's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.